Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by BogeyDope.com. Are you interested in a career in aviation, whether that be in the military or civilian? BogeyDope.com not only has a suite of courses, but they have a whole lineup of coaches that are there to help guide you through the process. As most of you know, when it comes to aviation, your dream job, you might only get one shot at it, so you don't want to mess it up right out the gate. Let BogeyDope and their team help you through the process. Both Bender and Vader are fighter pilots in the Garden Reserve, and I think they can attest to just how difficult it is to become a fighter pilot or any kind of pilot in the Guard Reserve. It's very selective and you might only get one shot. So when it comes to it, knowing how to rush a unit, what to wear, how to do a resume, interview prep, BogeyDope.com can take you through not only that, but a whole slew of other things. You can click the link down in the show notes below and you can use the code AFTERBURN for 5% off at BogeyDope.com. The Afterburn Podcast is brought to you by Wingman Watches. Wingman Watches, founded by a fighter pilot, they make some incredible timepieces. I've talked about them quite a bit, but if you're interested in an awesome timepiece, you can swing over to Wingman Watch or click the link down below. You can build a custom timepiece. If you use the code RAIN10, you get 10% off something that's currently out there. If you mention my name, you'll get a discount on the build. That's wingmanwatch.com. What's up, and thanks for listening in. This is a little bonus episode. Hopefully it becomes more recurrent, but a bro chat with Vader and Bender. If you remember, we chatted back in July. They've launched the Kodiak Shack podcast, which I encourage you to check out. That's linked down in the show notes. I have an episode dropping on Friday with Jocko Trimble, who is a former F4 driver. He was the last U.S. Air Force F4 shot down in Vietnam and spent 90 days in captivity. Quite an amazing individual. That was a great conversation. That drops on Friday. That is available currently and has been for Patreon supporters a little bit early. And as always, thank you to my Patreon supporters for keeping the podcast going. If you're looking to support the podcast, you can click the Patreon link down below, pick up some swag down in the link below as well, or just swing over to iTunes and drop a rating review. All of that helps the podcast out and keeps me going. With that being said, let's jump into the episode with Vader and Bender.
Well, we can cut out the first couple of seconds anyway, so this should be pretty easy. We should all maybe take a turn and then we'll pick the best one.
There you go. I like that.
It's going to be rain. Hey, welcome everybody to this is episode one of Bender's first Packet of Podcast. I have my special guest Rain here, who, I mean, this is a big deal for me to land Rain on my first episode. Obviously that's a big deal. And then Vader to boot. I mean, I'm excited for all of you guys who get to listen to this. It's going to be awesome. But we got Rain, Vader, and then I'm Bender, your host for this special episode of the Afterburn slash Kodiak Shack / Benders podcast. I got to come up with a better name than that, but we're just going to talk, I guess. All right, Vader, your turn.
All right. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Kodiak Shack podcast featuring the Bender podcast and the Afterburn podcast. And yeah, we're going to talk about maybe some innovation stuff, maybe Rain's story for all of Rain's fans so you can hear what his experience or what it was like being a student of Rain when he was a FAPE, and maybe some current events, innovation. We got a lot on the table. Rain, you're up.
So the intro I'm using is literally from the first second where Bender said, we can just cut out the intro and like, it's going to be this whole thing. So mission accomplished. Yeah. It's exciting to be able to do this. It's kind of challenging to align our three schedules, especially with Bender, out there with like a whole baseball team. And then Vader is learning how to fly a big old fat plane. So me, I'm just putzing around with two little twins.
Yeah, two little twins. So. That's harder than seven kids easily.
I don't even know how you guys did it. Because Bender has twins, again, plus a baseball team.
I think you're mixing your sports.
I feel like they're turning a year in like a week. And I feel like they've been around for 10 years. So
yeah. No, I feel like super easy. Well, heck, we had our third and we only had one. It was not twins. And we're still like, man, how do people do this? Granted, I left like 3 weeks later to go to the TX. So really, it's my wife doing everything, which is pretty standard, I feel bad for her.
It's the Air Force way. I'm sure she's super happy with you right now.
One, it's great because we're like, we're getting out of the military. We're getting out of the active duty Air Force. It's too busy. I'm never home. And then I go to the guard to leave for 4.5 months to then have a month TDY to Germany, which is going to be awesome. And then a 3-month TSP to Virginia. So I was like, yeah, this is active duty all over again.
Yeah. And dude, how old is August? Busy. He's like 4 weeks, right?
Over a month, huh? Yeah. So we're going on 6 weeks now, but yeah, he's small. He's bulking up. So that's good.
Yeah,
that's what you want.
That's right.
And you're a month into the TX?
No, a week. I've Tuesday. A so week. This last Tuesday I started, and it's been.
You can't
wild.
Say that. We got to cut that out, though. The IPs know that you're doing podcasts, when you should be studying ops.
That's true. Well, turns out all I've been doing is studying, and my ground ops are mediocre at best, but I assume that's most TXers. So well, it's funny. I assume you guys have kind of experienced some of this over the years of kind of doing transition courses or just changing, from a FAPE to another platform. When I was the instructor, like doing seed academics for like, oh, it's a 3-hour course, and then talking, and I'm engaged the whole time. And then now that I'm the student in the audience, I'm like barely staying awake while the instructor's talking and he's engaged. But as a student, I'm just like, oh man, these systems are destroying my life right now.
That's brutal. We should say too, TX, we keep saying TX, that's transition course. So Vader is going from the F-16 to the F-15. He's taking a step down wrong direction, but that's a life choice. How many people are in your class?
There are three dudes doing the TX1G, which is, I think it's 18 sorties, maybe 20 sorties. But yeah, it's pretty chill. It's a Strike Eagle dude, but he's been out of the jet for like 5 years. So he's not current. And then an A-10 guy. And then you see all the C-model guys kind of wince when they're like, A-10. Ooh, like this is going to hurt for you. Well, and it's funny because they're like, it's the same motor. I mean, it's the Pratt & Whitney 220 motor, which when you only have one of them in a Block 42 F-16, you're like, this thing's a liability. Apparently the C model accelerates extremely rapidly, so it's got the Pratt & Whitney 220s and it has a fire bottle. It has multiple generators. It's got a lot of stuff that makes learning the systems kind of a nightmare, but apparently as a pilot is very enjoyable. So
it's all steam gauges still, right?
They actually have more screens, but it's the standard like center display unit in the F-16 where one just repeats the other one, and you're like, okay, you know. But yeah, it's the jets they're flying up here, the old mechanically scanned radar, but it's still like a massive radar with a ton of power, so it puts the APG 68 and the F-16 to shame. But it's interesting. They, you know, the way the flight controls and everything work. What I was surprised at. So do you guys remember what the ramp weight of the F-16 is?
Like 41,000 pounds. Is it? That was like the max, that's right? That's like
some 35. Well, yeah, but before, like, just loaded at not like zero weapons. Wasn't it like 29,000?
Yeah, 27 or something, right?
27.
Yeah, okay. That sounds right.
So the, the Eagle, the F-15C, is 29,000 pounds ramp weight. And I was like, how is it that light? It's massive. And really? It's 2,000 pounds heavier than the F-16 without gas. And I was like, that's cool. Huh.
Maybe I got my numbers wrong.
Now, like, it sounds right. Cause I was thinking, you know, doing demo, right? The jet weighed 29.1 with gas in it, you know, 28,000 pounds of thrust. So about that. But then I also remember, like, the number six to me is like 43.2 for max weight with, you know, like a combat loadout.
When you
that seems super light.
Well, I guess when you think about it that way, then if it's 29.1 full of gas with no external bags, so it's
22 or 23 ramp weight.
Yes, so I guess that makes sense. So it's 23,000 ish pounds with no gas. Oh. So I guess that makes sense because I thought the F-16 was like no gas 29, and I was like, how are they the same weight with one a wingspan of 33 feet and one a wingspan of 42 feet? But it's because it's like a solid wing, you know. It doesn't have like leading edge flaps, trailing edge flaps. It's literally like a ton of hydraulics.
Wait, it doesn't have either of those two things?
So this is like, because I'm C-model guy now, I mean, I've never actually flown, but I'm in the TX. But so it is a solid wing. It has, other than flaps and ailerons, the wing is a one solid piece. And this is, again, aerodynamically, like, as pilots, you know, because obviously we're all pretty much aero majors.
Naturally.
So the wing was built to, like, fly at 100 knots at, you know, 1,000 feet off the ground, and also fly at Mach 2 at 40,000 feet. And it's just like, it stalls at different spots and different, you know, so it's the standard, like, true aero pilot's wing. It's just, it was built really well, I guess. Again, I'm a geography major, so I don't actually know. That's just what I was
thinking. Some aerospace majors listening to this and they're like, these guys are idiots. And you're like, yes, that's valid.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. I'll stay in my lane.
Yeah. I don't know. You push it forward, it goes fast. Pull up, blue sky, push down, green, you know, depends what you want.
Yeah.
Pretty much, except for you can over G. This is the first plane that you'll have flown that can over G, right?
That's true. That can, and it tells on you.
Oh,
yeah. It actually says, I told them they need to upgrade. So it's not just like a robotic sound, like over G. It's got to be like over G, you know, like something out of some video game. But yeah, it gives you in the HUD your instantaneous G available. So if you're too fast or you have like asymmetric like inputs. So if you have some aileron, you'll just watch like 9 Gs go to like 6.5. And you're like, well, that's so, hopefully I don't pull too many Gs, but you have a beeper and stuff. So, but you can accelerate into an over G.
Sure, it'll be fine.
Yeah. No big
deal. Yeah. The first over G is free, they say. So that's good.
That's good.
I got in the B1 sim and it does something like that. It's like a breathing G, which I think the T-38C eventually like maybe incorporate that logic, but I was in the B1 sim and I over G'd it every single time I turned. Cause you know, like it would change something. And again, there's some,
it's a 2G limit, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, and again, like you're like, I'm just going to do a nice, easy 15 degree bank and over G, like, jeez. I can't do anything in this plane. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's like when you ask them in mission planning, like, how long's your spin? And they're like, 3 minutes. You're like, I don't think so. How long is your spin? Yeah. You're not over G'd spin. I don't need 6 minutes.
That's what I thought.
Better safe than sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Oh man. So how's the mighty F-35 there, Bender?
It's so good. It's pretty good. It's been fun. Had a busy week, flew a couple times. What did we do this week? So we do the same. I always feel like I complain about the F-35, so I'm going to take a different approach. It's a cool jet. It does awesome stuff.
It's got skinny little legs.
We shot some stuff. We have, we've talked about the training, the embedded training, and how crappy it is. So, funny story, I suppose. We were doing, it was a guy's upgrade. So, we do a lot of mission commander stuff. So, he's like a new flight lead. He's also getting his mission commander look.
Yeah.
So it's 8 blue and 4 red plus the IAD, so all the surface to air missile layout. And we use embedded training, which is the synthetic threats that the F-35 can kind of generate. But there's limitations. So you can only have 4 people on the same scenario at the same time. So each force ship has to run their own individual scenario. And then if that breaks down, then each individual airplane has to run their own individual scenario. And then so there's always a host. The threats can only shoot the host, I think is how it works. Anyway, there's a lot of limitations to it, bottom line. But the worst part is if you try to run it and it doesn't run, you have to reset it. And then it changes your loadout back to a preset loadout. So we're at push time, push across the line, getting ready to shoot some stuff. And the flight lead, who's a new flight lead, is like, ET's not working. I'm going to reset it real quick. So he resets it as we're trying to get ready to drop bombs, but it takes all your bombs away, reloads bombs that you don't want, and then changes all your profiles. So we did it, no kidding, 5 different times, this flight lead reset the ET thing. And by the last one, I'm like, I don't care what weapon gets loaded on my airplane. I'm just going to drop whatever it is on whatever is out there. So it was pretty painful, but I don't think we had one. Maybe there was one badly dropped bomb with the correct weaponeered profile, you know? Everything else was whatever, just pickle. We'll see what happens.
It's something. It went off the jet. I didn't realize this.
It pretended to go off the jet.
So I did an episode with Mace that just came out, my last one I released, but we're talking piddle packs. And Billy Flynn, who's the chief test pilot for the F-35, I had him on previously, and he sent me an email about it. He was saying that the piddle pack is not authorized in the F-35. Guys still use it, and gals, I guess. But you guys have some special magical system. Is that true?
There is a special magical system. It involves suction, so nobody touches the thing. And I'm pretty sure you have to it's like a suitcase. You got to carry it around. It might even filter out your urine so you can drink it or something. Probably. We just use pill packs, and you have to completely unstrap because you have the center piece of your hole, all the straps go in right over your lap. So there's no access to anatomical parts, if you will, unless you take everything off.
So it's like the 5-point harness.
Yeah.
And you're flying 2.5s, 7-point harness.
It's only a 7-point harness. It has little arm ones that bring your arm in. That's where you get that extra 2.
It's funny. Yeah. It's funny the way you talk about that ET, because I've heard other 35 pilots talk about it, and maybe they just don't want to let the cat out of the bag. Cause they're like, yeah, it's great. You can do all these things. It's amazing. It's one of the best training things we have. Why do you even need emitters when you have training like this? And then I always think back to the way you talk about it. And I'm like, oh man, I wonder, maybe it's somewhere in the middle, but I trust your perspective more, having fought TMTs and it's understanding
not it. Not in the middle. that was my positive spin of the ET.
Yeah. Bullet, I don't know his last name. He's a captain wingman who transitioned from the C model. He's out at Hill with you.
Yeah. I think I met Bullet.
He was just up here. He did some F-35 capes brief. So that was interesting. Nice.
Yeah, ET. Well, I don't know how much. Apparently there's some new versions that people have modified in other countries that are way better than ours. So I think we're going to buy from the Dutch a better version of our own program. Nice.
Well, have you seen this thing that Red 6 is working on?
I read a little bit about it, but I want to hear about it.
I don't know if you've looked into it at all. It sounds, it almost reminds me of those old like Air Force commercials where it's like, it's not science fiction. Like it's, you know, whatever those were, it's legitimately, you will fight BFM, like visual maneuvering against a virtual construct through your helmet that's out the window. So you like offensive, high aspect, whatever BFM, and you're going to legit just fight it straight up, visual maneuvering, not like, hey, this thing's super far away and the computer knows it's there so I can shoot it. It's like, I look out the window and I'm watching it fly in relation to me. And I was like, I have so many questions. Like, I don't, you know, the jet can barely handle the processing that's going on now, right, let alone creating this like AR thing.
It's got to be augmented, like in the helmet or some kind of like this. So funny, I had Bond, who is the CEO of Red Six, on the podcast, one of my first episodes, in episode 007. That's call sign Bond. But he has a very interesting story. Tornado driver, first Raptor exchange from the Brits, but he didn't have a very good, he had some challenges in his upbringing that he overcame. So we talked a lot about that. And then Red Six had just kind of, it had been around, but he talked about how he got his plane and it kind of came about. And then I saw it was like 2 weeks ago, Boeing with the T-7 and the F-15EX signed some kind of big contract to, I guess, take it into the T-7 and into the F-15EX, I suppose. I got into the T-7 sim at Oshkosh, which, you know, building on like the TMT from the Viper and being able to, you know, practice against, you know, building simulated emitters to go out there, train and fight. Sounds like obviously the F-35 has, you know, another version that's come along, but that's the way it has to develop in order to kind of present enough problems for guys to go out there and solve. Because there's just not enough like either metal you can throw in the air or enough emitters you can put on the ground to actually replicate very complex problems. Really, I mean, Bender over there in his fifth gen world, like he needs some really, really complex stuff to go out there to make him a really sharp tool, so to speak.
Yeah. And SA2 actually will do it for us.
Say no more.
Yeah. But Red 6, I mean, the problem is you look at, again, looking at it from a Jahemix user where you could align the thing on the ground, then in the air, and it's still not exactly where the plane is. You look out the window and it's like, hey, the target location is not where it actually is. And now I'm going to do augmented reality training off of that. Like you need a new helmet. You need better visuals. Like it's a big lift, but I mean, if Red 6 does it, I hope so. Cause that would be, I mean, there could be some cool training there.
Bender's
you got to think how much red air training they would save.
Yeah. But
you know, like $35,000 an hour.
Yeah.
Why F-35's red air.
And you'd say that's probably like good enough to like, you know, like, oh, it's not quite in the exact spot in space that it should be, but it's again, saving us $5 billion in flying hours or whatever it is. Like the training's good enough. Is your helmet better than the Jahemix, Bender?
In some ways, I think so. I don't see your red dot anymore, Rain. I don't know if we lost your recording or not, but
yeah, I'm not. Again, there's so many backups here. Like, no one needs to see my face.
Not worried about it. It'd be cool if we were just answering questions that weren't actually asked on the recording. That'd be pretty fun. So it aligns pretty well. So as far as like MATL, that's probably more of a function of how good MATL is, which is our inter-flight data link, you know? So it's like we have Link 16 also, but then we have our F-35 specific data link. That's like spot on. That's like that thing sits on the helmet of your wingman. So it's pretty good. And the refresh rate is obviously really fast. So that's really accurate. As far as one of the really frustrating things, and I would have to be interesting to hear actually how it's been going at like Tyndall shoots and stuff. But for a while, for the first whatever banner shoots they did, they could not hit the banner with the F-35 gun because the alignment of the helmet and where the bullets were going, those things don't match up. So if you put your pipper on something on like the ground, say if you're doing like high angle strafe, So I've done this before. If I aim at the tank that I'm trying to shoot, I will miss the tank. But if I put my next to shoot, which is what we call like our, you know, our target or whatever, what would we call that in your SPI? Right.
Yeah. Something like that.
If I put that over the tank, and it could be like off to the right of my actual like display. But if I just put the pipper on the green goo that I generated for my target pod, then it'll shack the tank. So anyway, you just got to get used to not shooting at things that you see. You got to shoot at the green stuff. Because then it's pretty accurate.
It's super easy. It sounds disorienting.
Like, yeah, well, it's not made for casts either. So to try to like generate your own shootable like target on the ground is, that's pretty tough to do.
I did.
Well,
see,
it makes sense though, because it's a bore sight air.
Yeah, that'd be like awesome.
It's the air, you know, the standard like, oh, I have to do a tape title and a like HUD check because the bore sight's not perfect.
I remember that.
And then every single pilot is going to sit in a different position. So yeah, bore sight can almost always be wrong.
Right. It is, but it's a nail driver when you. I don't think there's a mill dispersion like there is in the Viper gun. So it doesn't like spread the bullets out. So it's like, if you put the thing on the thing and you track, shoot, track and don't move much, I mean, the bullets are just like follow each other into their own hole, you know?
That's awesome.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Unless you're missing. So you're either spot on or you're just like
the hole might not be
away.
On the thing that you're shooting at. Yeah, that's true. The bullets blow up, I think. So that helps.
Wasn't it your GBU-12 that dudded but knocked the motor out of the engine compartment on our first deployment?
Yeah, the most expensive bongo truck in the entire world. We dropped a GBU-54 and it hit like just a couple feet to the side. So it blew it off the road as it was driving, which is awesome. So the guys got out and they all like ran. And then we took care of them. And then we came back to finish off the bongo truck or whatever. So I dropped a GBU-12, so the second bomb, and it shacked right through the engine compartment and just put this massive hole where the motor used to be. And the JTAC's like, not good enough. That thing needs to be nothing. Like, it's not going to work anymore. I said, like, it does not have a front end. Like, nope, it's got to go off high order. So we put another GBU-12 on it, and it was gone. Mm-hmm. I'm like, three bombs? That was a $700,000 bongo truck right there.
Upgrades.
Yeah, I gained a lot of respect for GBU-12s though. Like when I saw how accurate they could be, I was like, I have no questions. Like this is a solid bomb if you do your job right.
Yeah, I thought they were nail drivers. We stopped dropping them. We dropped them like halfway through our deployment. Then the winter came because as we like ripped out Bender there and you know the old Middle East.
But and Vader was there too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Gosh, man, isn't that crazy that we? That was. What, 8 years ago? That was like 8 years ago, almost to the day, as we're talking about.
Yeah, almost to the day.
Oh, that's wild.
Time flies when you're having fun. Yeah, you guys really, I've talked about another podcast. You guys were really kind of like busy. Could you switch gears from kind of a CT training deployment to, oh, hey, there's a thing called ISIS. And now you guys need to go protect the embassy in Baghdad for 10 hours at a time or however insane you guys were flying. And then launching into Syria, just getting after it.
Well, I remember because we were trying to do a naming for our flight doc. And we had some solid names that would never go through, but we had really good names that we wanted to name them. But they were like, hey, this one, you could still leave base. And they were like, go get a ton of shawarma. We're going to have a squadron event. So I go and I pick up like three platters of just ton of shawarma and hummus and everything. And the first person I see is my flight commander, Smack Ballsizer. And he's like, you've been in crew rest for 2 hours. And I was like, understood. And, cause it was like, we are going like, you know, dawn, like, you know, before dawn, like lights out crossing the border. He was like, that's happening just so you know. And I was like, holy cow. I mean, I was still a first lieutenant when this all was going down and I was like, okay, here we go.
Right place, so, right time.
Wow.
You should tell him about your first thanking that night, David. I remember I was on the radio.
That was a significant emotional event.
Was it spicy?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, again, you know, life is tough when you're bad at your job. And so we're, Well, I mean, we just flown from Japan to Singapore, Singapore to the Middle East. And I mean, we tanked a ton of times. I mean, tanking was not uncommon at this point. But now we're like fully combat loaded out. You know, we've got 400 or 500 pound bombs, like live weapons, you know, guns full. And we literally like not again, like this is combat. It's not training. We're in tactical line of breath. So we're about a mile and a half, 2 miles separated, three and four, about 2-3 miles in trail, also a couple miles separated, and crossing into like into country. Like we turn all of our lights off, all of our everything. And so we like, you can't even see each other. I was like, I don't think this is safe at all, but whatever, you know, I'm just number two. So we rejoin on the tanker and, cause Bingo was pretty high, you know, Bingo was like, so fuel you had to go home with was like 5,500 pounds or something. And so, so we get to the tanker and then our squadron commander, like he gets his gas obviously. Cause he's like, Black Border Patch. He's been doing this all the time. He's probably drinking a Diet Coke while getting gas. And it's like four. Yeah. That was my only job. He was like, your job is to ensure I have Diet Cokes. And I was like, okay. But so as we're, he gets gas. So it's one and two on the left wing, three and four on the right wing. One gets gas. And then he kind of proceeds outboard of me as I'm now on the tanker's wing. And then I go to get gas and, you know, I kind of like move forward. It's nighttime. So you like flip the MVGs up and I can't get gas. Like I move forward and it's like return to stern. So I like move back, and then I like move forward again and he's like, return to stern. So I do this like three or four times. And then the squadron commander, is like, hey, get out of the way. Let three and four get their gas. So I move out of the way. And while I'm waiting for three and four to get their gas, my Bingo warning goes off and I just go on the aux radio. I say 1-2 Bingo. And he goes, okay. And so, I mean, I'm the mayor of Cockpit City. Theoretically, my job is to go home right now, which I don't, because I'm like, well, he would have told me. So three and four get gas and he's like, all right, two, get in there and get your gas. And, so I get back over there and now I'm about 4,000 pounds of gas. And, so like, yeah, odds are who knows. So I move forward and, they say return to stern. So I back up again. And then I look down and I'm at 3,200 pounds of gas and I should have gone home with about 5,000 to 5,500 pounds of gas. So the odds of me making it back to our base is very low. And we're relatively close to Baghdad at this point. So I was like, I might end up in Baghdad, like legitimately. And, so like, cause as a wingman, you never really say these things, you know, you don't really talk on the radio, you know, it's like to lead your own fire, you know, that kind of stuff. And I like go on the primary radio with, to talk to the tanker. And I was like, dude, I really need gas. Like I said those exact words and I move forward and then we plug in and then I get gas. And then I literally didn't fall off the tanker for another like 4.5 years. And, so it was one of those things, like whatever it was, it just like, it clicked. And then we, you know, we tank like 200 times in like 2.5 months after that. But yeah, it was a harrowing experience and I never understood how harrowing it was until I told my wife that story and she's like tears streaming down her face. And I was like, ooh, geez, that's bad. Yeah.
The self-preservation piece of that. There's a couple aspects you can take apart. Bender, do you remember it was the gambler's deployment? Well, I was the demo guy, but I was a safety chase for one of the elements. I think it was like a, was it like a six ship, four ship was like the plan, the different cells. And there was, you know, like two ground spares, two air spares, and a safety chase for each formation. And I was the safety chase for the first element or first formation. And like, of course, I crank and I'm the first jet that's good. Everyone else is red ball. So they're calling maintenance. So I'm like, I'm just going to go taxi. I went and taxi down a demo to get out of the way. But that was the night. Let's see. I was the second formation and I air spared, or I didn't air spare forward. I safety chased forward, like the first element just to go. But do you remember what happened with like the, was it the second element where they ended up launching, they're supposed to have 9 jets. They launched 10 jets. Do you remember that story?
I don't know if we're allowed to say names, but
yeah, you would tell the story better than I would. I give it to you.
Well, I was Advon, so I was already in country, but when everybody finally got to Afghanistan, they're like, dude, you've got to hear this story. But apparently, it was the second. Yeah, I can't, because there were three cells of six. We had 18 jets.
Someone scraped the stabs off the jet or the.
Yeah, the that was one guy. Yep. So that was bad. So he got put on an airplane to be carried over as not the pilot. But he made it into country. It was a really bad. That was like the worst AOS probably of all time.
That's valid.
But yeah, it was number. I think it was number six in the second cell. Got confused. So there's three number sixes out there, and because there's three different formations of six. And so, bottom line, they get confused on which cell is actually blasting because there's so much trauma. And so the second cell launches with seven airplanes, unbeknownst to all of them, until they get on the tanker and they're like, okay, number six, it's your turn. And two airplanes like go to get gas. Or whatever. Yeah, it must have been number fives or not. Five, that, sixes, five, sixes.
It was sixes. It was definitely sixes. I do.
It was sixes, I think. Yeah.
Wingman,
yeah, it wasn't five. It was six. Yeah. So the original six was like, one. Like, there's somebody else is trying to get gas right now. And he's like, six is on the boom or whatever, like all authoritative, like six is getting gas. He's like, I'm number six. He's like, negative. I'm number six. Like, and then the fire is like, what is happening? Because they have like zero idea like that any of this has happened until, and this is like 2:30 in the morning or whatever, like approaching New Hampshire, wherever they're trying to go to. And so eventually they're like, just say your name. Like, who are you? And he's like, I'm this person. I'm this person. And he's like, okay, you're not supposed to be with us, but you're already on the boom. So get your gas, the original number six, turn back, like go back to the next cell or whatever. And so he got kicked out of his original formation and had to go fly back and find the next formation. It was a train wreck, like full train wreck, like the entire way.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Eventually, we got 18 jets in theater. Yeah, home was only a little bit better.
It's like what people don't realize is happening at like 3 o'clock in the morning on the Eastern Seaboard is, you know, these, I don't know, I guess over $1 billion worth of jets are flying, you know, to go over to the Middle East and shenanigans. That was such a bad, it could have been so bad, you know, that, but hey, you just stay visual and don't do it. I remember out of that too. Remember, there's always like this configuration discussion of what the actual limitations are of that configuration.
Yeah,
going cross country. So for those listening too, obviously the Viper can be configured differently with different bombs, missiles, pods, etc., and that changes the max G available, the max speed available, etc. Well, normally, like a cross country config, like you'd fly around the demo, you'd have some fake wingtip missiles, which you need for wingtip flutter. Again, some aerospace engineer out there is having an aneurysm, but you're limited 0.95 Mach for the travel pod and then 5 G's for that too. But this configuration I remember was 0.85 limited. And it's like, kind of like sometimes like, there's an engineering, you know, 150% in there, I'm sure. Like, it's not really 0.85. That's pretty slow. So I'm the last dude taking off as the safety chase, and I'm going 0.85. And the plane is shaking violently to the point where I pull my flashlight out and I look at the wings to like make sure they're still attached and pieces aren't flying off of them. And I have, you know, I'm locked, radar locked, in trail. And the string is just, and you know, I got the link. So you see it like the flight leads over Myrtle Beach. I'm leaving Shaw. We're strung out like 80 miles trying to work this rejoin. Everyone else is, you know, facilitating the rejoin. And I'm at 0.85. I'm like, there's no angles you guys are working. You're all in a straight line, yet somehow you have this closure. So you like lock them up. You see their speed and you see your speed. You're like, well, that's slightly faster than I'm going right now. But I remember that configuration sucked, whatever it was and whatever the limitation was. But I think it was for like the
I know a lot of it was like it was probably a WOM, but it's like, no, it's only 0.85 if it's on the wing, if it's under the belly, it's, you know, and you're like, I feel like we're making stuff up so we can go 0.9. But
I think, well,
speaking of, there's some memo out there, I think some waiver existed on somebody's iPhone somewhere. They're just forwarding around to each other.
Yeah. I went with, you know, I don't know, Vader, if you met Rush Fulkerson, he was a FAPE.
I don't think
when
so.
You're going through the 41st, and then he was a Tiger at Shaw, and then one of the test pilot school. Great dude. But his job at after TPS at one point, like he was responsible for the F-16-2. Again, for those listening, that thing is like 700 pages thick, and it is all the speeds, max, you know, all the configuration limitations for everything imaginable in the F-16. It's insane just the amount of data that goes in there, but you have to have a PhD to read that thing, in my opinion. And probably still to this day, if you ask someone when the jet is full up 9 Gs with an HTS pod on the chin, you will get different answers from different people. Like, oh yeah, when tanks are dry, or no, it's when it's 5.8. Like no one knows. God knows how many times the jet has been and pods been over-G'd and asymmetrically over-G'd. I remember asymmetric over-G, that was like thing that like popped up towards the end of my demo days. I asymmetrically over-G'd one like a boss one day, which hack the OG.
You probably asymmetrically over-G'd every day.
I try to pull straight through. I remember a hack, he called me one day. He goes, hey, do you remember the sortie on this date and this date? And I'm like, it was a weekend. So I'm like, well, it was an air show. And you look at him, I was like, Evans was like, yeah, you asymmetrically over-G'd like da 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 da. I'm like, huh, well, I mean, I could see that being a possibility. maybe once or twice.
But it looked good, right?
Like, is that right? The people were happy. They're down there clapping. Everyone was cheering freedom, you know?
Well, I think the F-16, because it doesn't tell on you, you know, it doesn't say like, all right, party's over, go home. I mean, well, in the counter hops, you're like pulling, turning across the adversary's tail. You don't unload and roll and reset your lift vector. You just do a loaded roll at like 6.5 Gs. And I'm pretty sure that's above the asymmetric G limitations, but you know, you got to win.
Probably rolling into the BSA pattern. You're probably asymmetrically over G'ing it, you know, like into the break.
Especially my BSA. My BSA was never good, you know.
You don't have to worry about that now in the Eagle. You can't say the word bomb, I don't think.
That's right. Dave, it seems like they've gotten a little more used to it, but yeah, it's I try not to bring that stuff up. You know, I'm just like, yeah, you know,
you're one of the guys
happy to be here, proud to serve.
You got your chalk, threw away all your whiteboards.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Tough.
So I don't know if you're joking, but it's like legitimately there are chalkboards in the rooms to like literally chalk things up.
Are there whiteboards?
Like, okay.
Do people use whiteboards there?
There are both. So at Fresno, it's like you look at one wall and it's a chalkboard. Yeah. You look at the other wall and it's a whiteboard. And I'm like, there you go. And they have computers. So it's got like, you know, 40 years of fighter technology in one room.
What if? I walked into the Raptor vault for a WESUP at Tyndall before it got wiped off the face of the earth. And I do remember seeing whiteboards and chalkboards. And I was like, this is insane. Chalk. I don't even know who makes chalk anymore.
Yeah. Where do you get multicolored chalk?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could, right?
It is. I am certain of it
for sure.
I've seen it in person.
Do they have chalk holders like we do, like with their names on it and everything?
I haven't seen chalk holders. They have the same like pen, like whiteboard marker holders. But yeah, I jokingly said I was going to bring like a bunch of sidewalk chalk and like, but just like buckets, but you know, I won't actually do that. I'm not trying to make enemies.
I know people are listening to this who are not fighter pilots, probably don't get it. But again, little backstory here, like, I don't know, maybe around like the turn of the century when whiteboards became a thing for like the rest of the world, the Air Force and the fighter community migrated away from chalkboards and used whiteboards, except for the F-15 community that held on to the way that, I don't know, it used to be, or they, I think they say like you can be much more accurate with it is what I've been told. I don't believe that at all, but it's like, you like this harassment program we need to do. Cause I did a weapon school WIC support, F-15, Red Air support. And I was like, that was the most excruciating for a TI debrief, the most excruciating debrief I think I've ever been in, where they, you know, you have to get literally all your data for every minute so they can ask you if that's as depicted, as they draw and recreate this whole fight.
Yeah. Like, I'm wherever you want me to be. Let me on the board. Where I was.
Yeah, I didn't know where I am. So yeah, sure. Yes.
Did you receive a kill? Sure.
Yeah. I think it's because they don't, it's not even like just the little part of the fight. It's like redrawing the entire GPS God's eye view of the fight just with chalk, right?
Yeah. Which, as you mentioned, does exist on the computer that's sitting no less than a foot away.
It's crazy, but yeah, you know, the thing I'm excited about is, you know, all I got to worry about is some air to air missiles. And the BFM seems like it's a lot more difficult, just because it's like any given day, like you're better or worse than the other guy. Where in the F-16, it was like pulled to the limiter, you know, like the jet will give you as much as the jet can. Where here it's like, if you ask for too much, the jet won't give you anything. So you have to like ease off to allow the jet to do the things, because again, like the wing is no longer doing the stuff you want it to do. So you got to give it less AOA.
That is pretty cool. I wanted to jump back to the chalk because I've bitten off on this, but I think it's a good parallel between what you're doing at the Kodiak Shack and innovation. I think I might've mentioned it. So I mentioned the Fighter Pilot podcast. They had the DARPA guy on there and he asked Jello, he's like, hey, how many traps do you have? And Jello, just like any naval aviator, knows exactly how many traps he has because it's a point of pride. And I get it. That sounds terrifying and that's a tough thing to do. But his argument was like, if we could leverage technology and we make it easier to land on the boat, like you obviously still need to know how to land on the BOAT. But if it's the point where it's a non-event and it's just putting your pants on to go to work, could you take all that time you focus spending on landing on the boat and be a better, you know, fighter pilot of breaking things and killing things? Right. So that's the piece, like, you know, there's ACMI, there's, you know, live reconstruction, all this technology out there is like, is it valuable? Do you think to like, hey, we need to chalk this all up. I know that's probably really ingraining it, but if you spent less time focusing on that, and more maybe on like what the capabilities of this missile might have done, yada yada yada. Like, what do you think about that? I know innovation is kind of your thing.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing, and I think that we do this in a lot of communities, you know, whether it's the fighter community or in the fighter community in different platforms, is what is the desired learning objective? You know, is our desired learning objective to, and is it make you more capable at your job? Then maybe you keep it. But if it's the DLO is we've always done it this way, so we're going to keep doing it this way, then it doesn't make sense, you know, because like you said, like leverage technology to allow you to do, you know, all of these things, like the fight's not getting any easier. So let's use the technology to help us land on the boat so we can spend more gas training, or use data analytics on our flight tracked GPS lines to tell us where to focus our debrief. So instead of a 4-hour BFM instructor pilot upgrade debrief, you spend 20 minutes each set, because it literally helps you focus your efforts into those areas. It doesn't alleviate you from providing instruction. It helps you focus your instruction. Or Red 6, like you can get more reps and more blue air looks because you have technology helping you. So I think it's more, what are we gaining and what are we losing from the technology? And if we're better at our job at the end of the day, then use technology all the time, I say.
But yeah, but keep the chalk. But keep the chalk.
Yeah, well, obviously. We can't keep the chalk. Yeah, I say all that to say chalk stays.
You just skip, just get rid of the whiteboards. Keep the chalk, skip the whiteboards, go to ACMI.
Yeah. You can tell it's like an age thing. It's like there's some older C model dudes who to this day still only use chalk for their boards. And then there's like the younger guys, probably like a couple years younger than us, that are like, chalk is dumb. So you can see like in the next few years, you know, I'm not sure which will end first, the C model or the chalkboard, but maybe they'll go at the same time. But yeah, it's on its way out because the younger guys they're not sold on the chalk, you know?
I think about that with our briefing all the time. Cause you know, all three of us would probably design a very similar board and a similar like setup and flow and cadence to our briefs, you know? Yeah. And we draw like these really specific pictures to show a very specific example. And I'm like, I don't know. Like it feels good as the instructor to like be able to do that. You're like, yes, like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
But I've sat in a lot of briefings and I never, ever care like about that. You know what I mean? Like that's not what I'm like thinking about something else. Like how am I not going to screw this up? Or like, anyway, I think I've seen a couple guys do it in the F-35, but we have all this great footage of like actual missions where we're doing this thing. You know what I mean? A brief should just be like, let's pull up yesterday's like lines and video. And like, you know what I mean? Like, this is exactly what it's going to look like because this is exactly what we did yesterday. And these are what the emitters look like. This is what your weapons page is going to look like. And let's just spend 45 minutes and watch yesterday's fight. You know, I'm like, that would be way better than, you know, than what we put ourselves through. I think definitely fighter pilot briefings are, you know, a pretty high standard. I think they're awesome, but I do think that we are not as good, or it could be better. There's so much technology, so much data out there that we don't even touch, you know, that we probably could be using.
Yeah. It seems like there's a little bit of a haze or like, that's the way it's always been. So in order to prove yourself, like it's tough to brief, it's tough to debrief. And so being able to do that and going through that process again, kind of is like, all right, hey, this person meets the merit to at least be standing on the stage to go out there and do it. But it does seem like it's somewhat antiquated, or it could incorporate new things or embrace. Yeah. The world has evolved. The planes evolved. Technology has evolved. So maybe it should adjust somewhat. I go back to Cash Young, who was my DO when I showed up, and the dude was like weapon school instructor of the year, like twice while he was out at 16th, and great dude. I learned so much from him, and just the very, like, he was very brief and to the point with nearly everything. Like his debrief might've been 30 minutes. And like in that 30 minutes, he can capture all the highlights and you're not jabbing a pin in your eye and you walk away with there like some like good lessons learned. But I do remember, I think he was big like on shot doc, which was like, you know, guys would go through their shot doctrine. So again, for those listening, like depending on the mission you're going out there today to do, the threats, how many missiles you have, how many planes you have, like your shot doctrine, like when you're going to start shooting enemy planes at range would vary. And the flight lead was responsible for briefing what the game plan was or what the game plan is and when you're going to start shooting at what different points. But it can get like, not complex, right? But it's something, it could be different from person to person, day to day. And there are reasons why that would be valid. But his like, you know what? Like once the missiles start flying and like, you're really doing this, like, are you really sitting there waiting to like, okay, not yet now, you know, and like, you know, comms are screaming. You're trying to stay informed. I don't know. Again, it's changing too, just in the, you know, 4 years since I've really been gone. Now Bender's really again out there just solving complex problems, you know, things that I can't even imagine. We are.
It's pretty complex spear. Out there.
Tip of the spear.
Well, I think one of the things of it, and I know we were all that flight lead upgrade student, who's sitting there trying to brief something you don't understand. And as, and then on the other side, VIP looking at the FLUG upgrade E, and you're like, he does not understand what he's talking about right now. And so I think there's some goodness of like making them do the dog and pony show, especially in upgrades. Cause that like, it helps you understand where to focus your instruction. It forces them to try to understand these complex things. But I agree. I mean, McIntyre, I think the weapons school, like I know a lot of places use like a BRI, like a blended like debrief or brief tool that is like snippets of the actual displays in the aircraft. So it's not your or my drawings that are like maybe 80% true to life. They're actually much more realistic. It's the real thing. So you're like, this is exactly what it looks like. Kind of like what you're saying. Like, I know this to be true because it's from the airplane, you know?
It would be cool if the mission planning software was so like quick that you could actually go out there like with like the threats you're expecting and maybe recreate a radar snapshot that, you know, and like bring that in the brief. However, that would take you probably 2 weeks to do maybe. And then you wouldn't be able to get to whatever computer and yada, yada, yada. Like,
yeah. Well, so, oh, this was one of the things you guys will love to hate this. So when I picked up the seed top off course at Holloman, I roll in and I was like, all right, let's see these scenarios. And the scenarios are, they're fighting IHAWKS, which is a U.S. surface-to-air missile that they produced and they sold to other countries. So this is their primary longer-range threat, was the IHAWK. And I was like, not like any Russian-made SAMs or anything. And so I was like, all right, we're going to update it to like today's current baseline. So I go in and I'm like, all right, how do I build a scenario? And they're like, oh, it's really easy. You can build it in your jumps in the squadron. Or you can build it here. You have like your jumps interface, like your mission planning interface. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I get a login, I access it and I build it. And they're like, okay, now all you have to do is build a threat entity simulation, a TES, I think is what it's called, which you've allocated everything, but now you have to actually make the simulated threats associated with everything you built and then merge those things to then make them operate. And so we do all this, which takes literal months, like 2.5 months to do. And then I finally start running the scenarios in standard because I throttled up the threats to the actual threats that they're going to fight when they get to the CAF. None of them worked. It was like hit or miss. They maybe turn on, maybe they wouldn't turn on. And so we had all these like scenarios that literally took months to build that didn't work. And I was like, this is my nightmare. Because I can't, like, if you went on DCS, like Digital Combat Simulator, an amazing thing. You could go out and never having used it before, build a scenario and fly a scenario in a day. And that would be as good of training as going into our like $7 million simulators and do that. And I think that's our problem.
Yeah, that's crazy. If you wanted to bring DCS into, a simulator in the squadron, like let's, forgo classification issues, like just to go out and buy that and buy the equipment to make a simulator, like good luck. I don't know. I know you're familiar with the process. Like I, as a one each, I would say dude, who's not familiar with procurement things, I would say that would take years and maybe not even come out fruitful.
We tried exactly that. We tried to buy the engine, which I believe is a correct term, like the pretty much the core of the software, and then make it our own, and then have somebody build onto it what we wanted. And it was a non-starter. They were like, nope, not a chance. And we were okay. Even though people are using it, A-10s, but they use it because they're A-10s and they're like, this is the best simulation. But I flew an F-16.
It's so accurate.
It literally is. I flew an F-16 in DCS. And I was like, this is legit. Like it was very nice, but we won't see it. And if you talk to anybody in the like acquisition space, they're like, oh, you don't want that. And then they try to funnel you into this other program that's trash, that you'll spend just as much money on to not get good training. And you're like, okay, well, we're just stuck.
Well, on that note,
that's not good news.
It was fun talking, guys.
Yeah. They'll figure it out maybe. Well, that's Red 6. Red 6 can fix that stuff.
Kodiak Shack. Kodiak Shack has solutions for all of these problems.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
I know General Brown, like, was his like innovate or die letter, but I saw a couple blips pop up last day or two about things again with just not being agile and responsive. You know, we have all these systems and procurement, you know, rules, laws, yada, yada, yada. It just goes on and on and on that just makes it so cumbersome to do anything. But, you know, like China, obviously, whatever they need to do to win, they're going to go out and we want this. We're just going to do this. Like there's no, yeah, there's no stopping them when it comes to that. Right. If they want to do it versus like, I don't know, you want to do something. Yeah, good luck.
They are pushing towards that. And they are trying to make people innovate, get around these like classified silos and make people share. Cause the easiest way to keep your information safe is to never share it with anyone. So that is like most of our classified program managers are just like, you just never get to see or interact with this data. And then it's safe. What we're seeing right now is some of the primes that have these massive contracts that some of our innovation companies, they need access to it. Cause obviously the prime owns the information right now. They won't let those companies access the data because it's not in their best interest. So like,
right.
A PEX is not going to be like, sure, just have all the data you want from our PEX like database so you can replace us in the future. So companies that are like trying to work in the space of like scheduling or mission planning in the vault or that, they don't have to participate. There's nothing in their contract that makes them. So that's going to be a definite challenge is as these programs hit commercialization, like how are they actually going to be utilized? Because sometimes they run into a brick wall because they just can't access the software, you know, that they need to actually be useful.
Yeah. These are complex problems, but it really, it should be, but I know it's more than just saying, hey, go do this. Deal with again, laws and proprietary information. And obviously it's competition. So I don't know.
Well, and they can always fall back on their contract and say like, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star general. Nowhere in our contract does it say we have to release this information to anyone other than us. Because just like we saw with F-16 operating systems, like we pay an organization to build our operating system. So we're at their whim, which now we own it. So we get to do whatever we want with it. So I don't want it to be all downer though. There's some cool stuff going on out there.
Yeah, for sure. It'd just be nice that like, let's say, I know scheduling always pops up. At least that's the bane of most people's existence in the fighters or it's definitely the bane of the scheduler's existence. And a lot of time gets sucked into that. And there are certain programs that have to be utilized because that's what's been purchased that just don't do what people need to, or it just takes an extra amount of time. But if like another product popped up, like, hey, you know what? This one actually could be better if we went this route and like gave them the opportunity or had the ability to switch contractors like on the fly or at not these lengthy contracts. I don't know.
Yeah.
You guys are smart.
And we're seeing that.
I'm not very smart.
We're seeing that now. I mean, we're seeing bases as individual squadrons are like buying different programs like the automated scheduler from Ops Lab or Duality. They're working on scheduling for like missile silos. So like, individually squadrons are tackling this problem. I think the big hurdle is like, when do you stop funding the prime that gets the big money and then start replacing it? Because none of these programs fully replace a prime. Like it doesn't do, you know, the interaction between the arms, which is the, you know, the, like the flying tracking program. So there's no interface between them. So that's like another thing. So none of these programs are like fully replacing a prime right now. So that's the question is how are they going to make that transition and do it smoothly? Cause right now that is still unfigured out.
I know you want to keep this positive, but here we go. Cause you're, like, you're just starting your reserve time. I don't think Bender has to mess with UTAPs at all. That's how you put your.
I did when I was a part timer. I did it. Shot.
Yeah, like jab a pin in my eye. Like I'm like, all right, I got to use this computer to log in and do it. And then I got to go to this computer and got to use this browser to do this. Like it takes hours to put in something just to be able to go to work on orders, which is super frustrating. But here's a little gem, because I think Bender missed this since he's been on orders. But the sunset, you know, Internet Explorer, that went away. I know you guys, probably everyone in the world's aware of that, but who uses Internet Explorer? Well, I'll tell you who uses it. The United States Air Force and UTAPS. Oh, there's like, hey, we got all these like special workarounds. Like, you got to go in here and do this to this browser and then go over to this browser and do this. Like, it's, there was like no plan, like, hey, it's sunsetting. But yeah, we don't have a plan in place to have a new program, that one that could be, I mean, I don't know coding, but I probably could come up with something after watching some YouTube videos that might be better. But the fact that you're like, hey, like, it's just these simple things, like these programs and this technology exist in the public space that could be utilized, and just like, hey, we're going to change the logos, and oh yeah, you need this and that. Like, we'll change the funnels of how these lines are going to run the code, and off the races you go. It's like dealing with web developers. Like, yeah, they can build an awesome website and change this and this around really quickly. Like, I don't know. I just, we use software so much in our day to day, and it seems like that is a recurring theme outside of the jet to be a bane of existence. Just is a huge time suck.
Well, it's embarrassing. It's freaking humiliating. Our comm, our IT is, it's so embarrassing.
Yeah, like, it's shameful.
It is. I got a new computer like 3 days ago, and I like docked it. It took me like 7 days to finally like get the thing to recognize the domain or whatever, all this bullcrap security stuff. And then I like go to open up Outlook, and it's like, oh, we didn't put Microsoft Office on that computer. Like, why? Yep. Like, it literally has no other programs on it. Like, what do you think I'm going to use this for? Like, well, did you want Microsoft Office? Like, yes, I freaking want Microsoft. Like, I want PowerPoint and Outlook. That's it. Just put it on. Yeah. Like, okay, it's going to take 3 more days or whatever. Like, oh my gosh, this is not science fiction. I mean, it doesn't even make. But I mean, it's bad. If we should take every congressman and every senator and replace all their IT with Air Force IT. Like, give us, you know, $90 billion to figure this out. And then you don't get your new computers until, like, you got to work on our computers basically until you give us the money.
Well, they actually changed that. So now, because there used to be a requirement in that any computer bought had to go through COM, and COM had to like buy the computer out, and they realized that COM didn't know what they were doing for the most part. So they, now you can just buy it. Like, you can go on GSA and just buy whatever computer. So if your squadron has the cash and they're like, everybody gets like a sports car laptop, cool, buy them. Like, you're not in trouble for that. But the, they are, it's not just COM though. Like, oh, I was so mad. So I'm coming up here on training orders. So I'm in the Air National Guard and I'm on training orders. And then before I was on these orders, I was on temporary AGR. So I was just a temp AGR, which is like a full-time active duty person. You're just in the guard. But my temporary AGR orders ended on the 2nd, and my training orders started on the 3rd. And so I had that, the 2nd was the day they did not overlap. So for 24 hours, I was not on orders. So I was out of everything. Deers. I was like, I got emails from the VA because they're like, hey, good, like a what is it? A good start or ready start or whatever.
Yeah.
So I had to call Deers. I'm driving up here, call Deers, which is like the manage your dependents. And they're on the 3rd and say, hey, I'm actually on orders. And they're like, oh, you are. Well, reactivate your account. And they're like, make sure you call TRICARE, because obviously we won't. And then I call TRICARE and they're like, oh yeah, well, you guys are like getting pulled back into the system. None of your pre-set up things still exist because you were out for an entire day. And I was like, cool. Why wouldn't this be the case? You know?
Yeah. They can erase things really fast. They can't load them.
Yeah.
There's some guy who was telling a story that, he was on an AGR tour, and this is off a Facebook post for my current job, but he switched, that job got divested. And so he got hired at a new unit. Well, he owed like $17 and call it 69 cents off a travel voucher, you know, again, that didn't get processed, and you know, like how you even get notified for it. But since that job went away, like it closed, like they had no access to any of his accounts, which I now understand, because when I moved jobs, it was like I was brand new to the Air Force, even though I was still in the reserves. I had to it's like 17 pages of financial documents you have to submit. I'm like, you don't need this, do you? You already have all that. I'm like, oh no, sir, we need all that. I'm like, it's literally the same bank account you've been paying me since I was in college. Like, no change. Like, sir, we need all that. I'm like, God, how broken is this? So now this is why it makes sense. Like, his job goes away. He moves. He owes $17.69. Well, DFAS tried to reach out to him multiple times. That's the finance people. And they sent him to collections. So he went to collections. And by the time he found out about this, is when the collectors are calling. And he gets in touch with DFAS. And they email him what they have been mailing him. And so he goes, he's like, where did you mail this to? And he's having the lady on the other line read it. She goes, like, reads the address. He goes, okay, where did you mail it? And she reads it again. She's getting irritated. He goes, you mailed it to yourself. And she, like, it took a minute for her to realize. So they didn't have his address. So they, like, auto-generated this and then were self-mailing themselves this guy's balance, you know? And you're like, and I guess that could happen anywhere, but you're like, yeah. And that's when anyone's like, yeah, we want more government to solve our problems. I'm like,
yeah,
no, you, being a part of a fighter squadron, when you walk in at the end of the year and there's all these flat screen TVs because they had to spend all the money, and you're like,
yeah,
this is probably one of the highest functioning organizations in the DOD. And here we go.
And that's one of the worst parts is it's not even, we were talking to, I think it was very minimally, but we were talking to Slander Entine about kind of spending money, and because there's different dollars can be spent on different things. So you're like, hey, we want to buy innovation stuff. We want to buy human performance stuff. Like, we all have back problems. Let's get something like a game ready. And they're like, you can't spend that money on that. You have to spend it on like office equipment. And so they literally force you just to waste it or lose it, which talking to Slander, no one's just going to let that money go because someone else is going to allocate that money to their own Veridesks and big screen TVs. Right. So, you know, and they're going to look like the shiny pen.
The Veridesk is awesome. Yeah.
If I could go back 5 years, I'd invest in Veridesk. Dang it.
For sure. Yeah.
One of those missed opportunities.
There's still time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be.
I know, like, right? What's that?
Oh, I was going to say there's going to be end of year funds again. So, you got to get the chance. Yeah.
Most Veridesk is on top of each other.
Yeah. Goes super tall. Yeah. Randy, I gotta tell this story because I've been waiting probably over a decade now to tell this story.
Oh man.
Heard Rain's background. So obviously he was a FAPE. Bender was a FAPE as well. They were Bender was Ram back then. And then Rain was Muddy. And which I have to say, both of you totally good dudes as the student going through everybody was like, oh, they're cool IPs and CFEs. So I'm one of the first people, and it's not even a but, it's actually very funny. I'm one of the first people to go through pre-contact. And at the time there was like a pre-contact check ride. You have like six flights in the airplane or something. You're very young in the airplane. Yeah. And so I fly my pre-contact with Rain. And I fly my final contact with Bender at the time. But so I like meet up with Rain. We go fly the sortie. And before we do the sortie, they're like, hey, we just changed the grading system. Like, it used to be like the higher the number, the better the score. And now it's like lower the number. Like, it's like golf, you know, if you got a 0E, it'd be a perfect sortie, you know? So I'm like, all right, cool. So low number's good. So I go out and fly, and Rain's quiet. Like, he just, you know, I mean, cause theoretically that's what's supposed to happen. I'm supposed to just fly the airplane. He's supposed to observe. And we get back and he asked me some questions and he's like, cool, man. Yeah. See ya. And I was like, all right, sweet. You know, went pretty good. So obviously my entire class like crowds around because I'm the first one to go through and do my check ride. And I'm like looking at it. I'm like, gosh, this isn't me. I'm like counting. I'm like 1, 2, 3. And then it's like 25, 26, 27. And then I keep counting. It's like 32, 33, 34. And I get a 34G. And like my whole class watches me get a 34G. And they're like, how do you not hook? And I was like, I don't know. Like, he was such a good dude. He wouldn't hook me. And one of the dudes in my class was like, hey man, good job. I was like, thank you. But, oh man, it was so, it was just comical. Cause I was like, oh man, I just got destroyed on that one. But it cracked me up, but super nice. Sifi. Yeah, that's right.
Super nice. I remember those days. Cause it was like, yeah, normally that probably would have been like a three, like a 4G or, you know, like that, like if it was like a 1, 2, or 3, that'd been an E, then like a 3, 4, like somewhere there. Like that's kind of like the normal score you'd have gotten, which is all like make believe. Cause if you look at everyone's grade sheets, they switched it. So for those listening, like basically you got unsatisfactory, satisfactory, fair, good, excellent. And that's where the G or the E comes from. If they failed the check ride, it'd be a U. And the number of downgrades, meaning how the number that are not excellent. So if you got a good instead of excellent, that's one, then another mark, whatever. But I remember like there was a lot of consternation because again, like you're hearing the other classes like, oh, dude, you got 34G. Like he's terrible. Like that would never happen beforehand. But I remember I flew with one girl and it was the worst check ride I ever did. Like it was just, it was heinous. She tried to go wrong way in the pattern. Da, 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 da. I think it was like a 70 something, 75. It was like, it was out. I mean, it was the most, but it was just so bad. Like I hooked her on multiple items. You try not to do that, like just compounding. Right. But like, it was so bad and so unsafe and several different categories. And I remember like standing at the crew bus, cause I was like, trying to be nice, kind of ease the tension there a little bit. I know there's some nerves. So, like before we went to fly, I'm like, yeah, what do you want to do? Like, you know, want to go fly E10s. It's prior enlisted. And so you're trying to, okay, cool. And then this, yeah, the sortie did not go towards like, hey, you're going to track T38s. This is kind of done now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, some
people, you know, that straight up, you're like, nope.
I think when I told her that she didn't pass and for the number of reasons she didn't pass, and then I'm sure, I guess, you know, like every student goes back and sees their grade sheet and counts what they got. Because sometimes you got told, like remember my pre-contact was with Con. Oh, no, Con, it wasn't with Con Krychek, but I went back to the flight room because he was a FAPE, like the oldest FAPE in existence. And he's like, what'd you get? I'm like, I don't know. He just said, good job. And he like pulled it up and then like went to count it. But I'm sure I didn't tell her, hey, that's going to be a 75U or whatever. It was like she found out afterwards. And Carl Miller, that's was like her, one of her instructors. And he's like, dude, you just destroyed that. And I was like, it was really bad. It was really bad in so many different ways. But Here we are. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, for everyone. No, it was good. I mean, that's what pilot training's for. Like it's to be like graded and judged and stuff. So, I mean, I understood it and it was one of those at the time where I was like, oh, kiss fighters goodbye, you know, but turns out it worked out. So, but yeah, it was,
well, hopefully again, that was like a transition. Like, but I imagine I obviously going to Vipers right out of pilot training, going to the 38. It wasn't like there was a bunch of 38s and Vipers just sitting around when you went through. Everyone else's scores, you know, mirrored that grading system, hopefully.
Yeah, it was, I was definitely a slow boil. Like I think I started out T6s on cap. Like I was not prepared. Cause it turns out I didn't actually have any academic challenges before pilot training. So it was definitely, oh, okay. This is not easy. So it took a little while, but yeah, I think I got a little lucky with people who could have gone 38s wanted T1s. And I was like, sure, you know, but yeah, it worked out. I think I had the exact opposite happen in 38s. I got a 4U. And I was like, well, that, at least it was a low number, but, yeah, it was, I didn't meet the climb out and he hooked me because it was the departure restriction of like 7,000 by this radial. And I was like, who even knows that? But
yeah, it got that's me good. Thing. That's probably, you're probably used to going straight to the airspace right off the end of the runway. And the one time you have to fly the arc or something.
Well, it was legit, like on my check ride. Yeah, there was clouds at 5,000. My buddy, a Butcher Baker, who's awesome. He's doing an exchange to England now. He might be an astronaut. He's a test pilot, but he overshoots on the rejoin out of traffic. And so I level off, cause obviously, and I don't make the radio call like, hey, you know, departure, leveling off at 5,000, not going to meet the climb restriction. And so I fly a good sortie aside from the climb out. And it was like, well, you're going to see that one again. And then my flight commander was like, what happened? So he literally made me pass the 7,000 feet. And he's like, I got the jet. And then I didn't do anything. I just sat in the front seat for like an hour.
Those are the best kind of check rides.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, if you do it exactly like this, it'll take 15 minutes and then I get to fly the rest of the mission. Just
do it. It's like best for everybody.
Bender used to fly together.
Yeah.
What's that?
Those were good times.
Yeah.
I'll say, when me and Bender would always fly together and we'd take the jets for like the last like 15, 20 minutes of every sortie, which is probably not good, but you know,
made us better pilots.
That's right. We were honing our craft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those kids didn't want to fly anymore anyways. They just wanted to watch.
That's right. Well,
especially on check rides, they were just like, take the plane. Like if the sooner I cannot possibly hook, the better.
Oh man. 100%.
I hooked my instrument right in T6s, which, and this could just be because I love my ego or whatever, but like looking back, I'm like, I would have given myself like an excellent for sure. Like, I got like slam dunked on this approach. I like made it all happen. I threw down my gear right before like crossing the threshold. I was like, nailed it. Like, I just made that happen. Like super athletic. And then I get back and like, you hooked. Cause you know, it wasn't all stable 3 miles before the final approach fix. And like, da da da. I've just been flying like that my entire career though. So now I'm like, that he didn't get it. Like, honestly, he's a plant eater, if you will. Like, that's how it should be. You should have been like, dude, that was awesome. I can't believe you made that approach happen.
It wasn't unsafe because he didn't take it from you. So again, that's when it's like, all right, basketball or golf clap there. Like, I'm impressed. This guy's got it.
Yeah. That's pretty bad.
I got told one time that if you had any more closure, you would have overshot like on a rejoin. Cause I was just like screaming in there, just like, whoa. And then just like idle speed brakes, like, you know, and then just like parked it. And the instructor was like, yeah, you got lucky. Like that was not on purpose. Like, you got a great, which
yeah.
Yeah.
Look at me now.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Oh man.
Well, sweet guys. I think this was successful other than my recording shenanigans. I don't think you're having any video on mine end, but you know, again, no one needs to see my face. A couple little slips here and there, you know, what can you do? So parting shots.
I'm glad we got a chance to chat. We've been trying to make this happen for weeks, but I'll keep you guys updated on the old F-15C TX. Cause there's going to be a lot of shenanigans. I can already tell. Cause I'm focusing more on shooting missiles instead of ground ops. So it's probably going to end poorly.
We need to do a weekly debrief with, how's it going with Vader? You know, like listen to what happened this week.
Oh gosh. Oh yeah, Bender's kicked off. I think I'm by myself right now in the recording.
it's just gonna be a monologue that doesn't make sense because there's like a third of the conversation.
That's right. I will tell your story. Just post it as a
just his video where it's like smiling and occasionally laughing.
I need a screenshot just so I can have proof that there were other people here with me. Vader's lost his mind.
Yeah, he photoshopped that eagle stuff. Cool.
Get ready. There's going to be a lot of stories. I guarantee it. I assume, knock on lumber, there'll be some overgees. So we'll talk about them.
That's going to be great. Awesome. See you guys.
All right. See you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Vader and Bender. Again, Jocko's episode drops on Friday, and that's available currently for Patreon supporters and has been for about the past week. If you're interested in supporting the podcast, swing over to patreon.com/afterburnpodcast. And as always, if you're willing to drop a rating review over on iTunes and Spotify, that helps the podcast out. We'll see you next time.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.